passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. I'm here with my main man, my co-host. I'm gonna keep saying it. You are the master of the robot. You've mastered the robot. You are Dr. Frankenstein. Dylan White. What's going on, man? How are you?
Not too bad. Two full weeks left of regular season baseball, regular season fantasy baseball. It's every move's magnified. I don't know if you saw, there was a tweet. It was like the Blue Jays. This is real baseball now. Blue Jays playoff odds on Fangraphs. It was like 79% they're going to make the playoffs, and then they got swept by Texas, and it was like 29%, and then they swept Boston, and so they're back up to 79%. It's just whipsaw action, roller coaster ride. You can't get comfortable at any time. And that's how my fantasy teams are right now as well. So exciting times, very stressful times.
Yeah, and I wonder how much the horse race is impacting it. There's so many teams that are in play right now. You got six teams for three spots in the NL wildcard race. You got, I guess, five technically, because someone's got to win the NL West, and all three of those teams are with the Astros, who I believe are in, currently in first place as of recording this. The Rangers and, of course, the Mariners are all sort of in this three-way death match with like two and a half games between them. So I think that's impacting fantasy too, where you have teams maybe more willing to go for it, calling up some players that maybe you wouldn't have seen in other seasons. And then just a lot of action. So, it's pretty exciting. But fill me in, man. How are you doing on your pursuits in the main event as well as Tout Wars?
I'll start with Tout Wars. I thought that's over. I think I'm currently in third. I don't think I'm going to win. The huge cushion I had in ratios where I could just run out the two starts pitchers has collapsed. I took two zeros from Ohtani the last 2 weeks because it was not clear whether he'd be in or not. And then he was never put on the IL. And so I couldn't swap him out. And so I've kind of blown that. So Tout second or third is probably where I'll finish. The main event overall, the big one is we're still clinging to first overall. We had two pretty bad weeks offensively. Basically, we've gone up every week, but then like the last 2 weeks, we have not. We've either stagnated or gone down. So we're clinging to a tenuous lead. We made seven FAP moves this Sunday just to show sort of the desperation and the grind. We were getting in position for the final week. So we want to survive this week. We want to see where we're at. We still have some money left for the last week, so we can pick up some guys to fill some holes. But right now it's watching every game, constantly refreshing MLB at bat. Like, for example, it was 1-1. Mets versus Marlins. We're recording this Monday night, and three of our competitors have Tanner Scott. We have Adam Ottavino, And then Jeff McNeil hit a home run off of Scott. So it was 2-1 going into the ninth. So we have Ottavino to get the save, which would have been great. If he blew it, then Tanner Scott may get the win, which would have been just a huge swing in standings. Luckily, Ottavino held on for the save. So that's a victory for the good guys. But it's just stuff like that, where just every move, every...
The minutia. Like,
yeah, it's ridiculous. Everything is just, it's so, I can't believe how important it, like, you can't take a day off. I can't take a week off. Like, in June, you take a vacation and you phone in literally your lineups, and like, that could cost you, because everyone is so focused and so locked in at these, like, in these high stakes competitions that you just can't afford to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, you know, the game theory, et cetera, is the exciting part of that, even beyond, you know, the player analysis, et cetera. But Dylan, you participated with me in what's going to become, I guess, an annual tradition now, which is my profiles to target in fantasy. And it's based around, you know, sort of a data-driven approach, standout data, kind of looking at the big three, which is sort of the approach that I always tout, where I'm looking at contact numbers, specifically contact rate and in zone contact rate, chase rate, which, you know, gives me a good measurement of approach. Swing rate obviously is kind of measured in there as well. And then, of course, power. So we're looking at average exit velocity, 90th percentile exit velocity. I'm also looking at, you know, sort of angles as well in terms of what their average launch angle is, what their hard hit launch angle is. So balls over 95 plus, and then pull side launch angle, you know, and that tells me a lot about the type of hitter somebody is, especially when we have the really big sample of a full season and are kind of able to dig in and digest some of those numbers. And prospects are moving through the minor leagues faster and faster these days, Dylan. So it's important for us to identify these profiles, because many of these guys, even ones we don't expect, could sort of end up in the major leagues and get, you know, 150, 200 at bats and be relevant in all formats. So really kind of interesting. And, you know, it's great is sort of watching the guys. We did put up part one. Part two is more underrated profiles. And what's fun is seeing some of the guys from last year's underrated profiles make their way into sort of the top 100 or top 100 adjacent sort of players that we have here. So we listed out 20. I think I wrote up a dozen myself. You wrote up 8. And I want to talk about some of these players. And I think the guys you're familiar with as well. One name I wanted to bring up, though, is Jackson Holliday. And I feel like he's sort of reaching that point where he's been number one and touted so highly that we're starting to pick him apart a little bit now. But I think one thing that is consistent with him is just how unique his profile is, even for a skill guy. Good contact numbers, good in-zone contact numbers, obviously is a low chase rate guy. The high-end power of 102 miles per hour is kind of mediocre, but his average exit velocity is pretty high. And, you know, if you look at sort of age, there's not many guys with 102 mile per hour average exit velocity at 19 years old. So I guess my question to you is, what are your power expectations with Holliday?
That's a good question. I mean, I run sort of the age curves and all that stuff, similar to what you see on like, you know, Scout the Stat Line, some of these data focused prospect sites. And his peak home runs based on these historical curves is not that high. It's only like, you know, 15 to 20 home runs, not even 20. It's slightly below average, even though he's, you know, 19 years old at AA, AAA now, I guess. It's just, he's not dominating. Like you said, the exit velocities aren't that high. I think that is going to, in retrospect, be, we were conservative. I think because he's so young, he's just going to develop. He's obviously got the talent and the pedigree to, you know, just continue to improve. I don't think he's capped, by what he's doing right now in the minors, in his first season of professional baseball. So I think these are going to be like looking to be like grossly underestimating his power potential. So, you know, I see 2020, 300 batting average, you know, 380, maybe 400 on base percentage for like years. Yeah. In that Oriole lineup. So I think this is a case where if you're sort of beholden to the data, you're actually you're gonna miss out on him. And so you need these like us saying he's the number one. We're obviously not the only outlet saying he's the number one prospect, but like this is where, you know, you have to trust what the scouts are saying and realize he's gonna be just an incredible perennial all-star in the majors.
Yeah, I think the underlying data is really good. Plus chase rate, good contact rate. I think if he stayed in A ball season long, his contact rate would have been absurd. And you know, the average exit velocity is 91 miles an hour. It's not that far off from like Junior Caminero's is. I think a lot of him actualizing power isn't necessarily strength or EVs or raw power or anything. I think it's bad angles is actually what it's going to turn out to be, which is kind of interesting because another guy with huge raw power that's right up there, Junior Caminero, he's a guy that actually has huge game power despite sort of like mediocre angles. He doesn't have like a ton of launch consistently. Hard hit balls are fine. You know, doesn't have like a really steep launch angle to his pull side either. So it's kind of interesting. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on Caminero?
I think if you have the elite exit velocities like Vlad Guerrero or Juan Soto or even Roddy Mauricio, even if you don't have the angles, I think you'll still be successful as long as you're in this like double plus kind of zone for the exit velocity. So that's where Caminero is. Like his 90th percentile exit velocity is over 110 miles an hour. It's pretty absurd. That data, that peak projection analysis that I'm talking about, I have him at like over 110 WRC plus, 25 to 30 home runs. And it's just, and he's been there pretty much all season. So it's not like he slumped and then kind of like peaked again or caught fire at a right time. It's like he's basically hovered at that projection the entire year. So, I mean, I think, you know, kind of if you had to choose between the two of them, for example, it's just kind of what you want. Do you want the slugger who's going to have the 30 plus home runs, or do you want the well-rounded, like kind of Wander Franco profile that Jackson Holliday would have? So yeah, I mean, I love Caminero. I love Jackson Holliday too. So like, you can't go wrong with either of them, obviously.
Yeah. And I just lost my keeper in fantasy football. Looks like Nick Chubb is probably going to be done for the season. So now that I'm talking back about baseball again, my mind is actually blown. Yeah. I mean, Caminero has just been an absolute stud this year. There haven't been many guys, you know, at his age 19 season, technically, that have hit 30 home runs. There's only a handful. This is really special power. Part of me kind of wishes it was another organization. I'm almost worried that he's not going to come up next season. But I don't know if in this day and age, with the benefits of a guy like this, maybe being up early, if that sort of trumps the service time stuff. I don't think he's all that far away from being ready, Dylan, to be frank. How many games do you anticipate he does play in 2024?
Good question. I think he's going to play at least half the season. I think I don't know what the fallout of the Wander Franco situation is going to be. I don't know about like the extension and the like, whether it's insured, all this stuff. Like, I don't know if Tampa Bay is like snake bitten and worried, or if they're going to be kind of like freed of the shackles of that. And then they, you know, maybe they'll sign Caminero to an extension. This is based on no inside information or anything. This is just me talking. So, I mean, I could see them doing a thing where they sign him to an extension and they bring him up early, or they, you know, wait till after the Super 2 type thing and then call him up, you know, middle of May or something. I think he'll play quite a lot. He's going to start in AAA, I think, for sure. He's pretty much done everything you can in AA, I would say. And then, so he'll start in AAA and then he'll come up because I'm sure he's going to mash in AAA right from the outset because that's all he's ever done. So I expect quite a lot of Caminero in the majors next year.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I'm hoping that's what happens. Speaking of another guy who could mash and come up and be in the majors next year, how about Wyatt Langford? I know we've talked about him a little bit in some of these podcasts. When we dig into the data, he continues to sort of just be a magnetic potential pick in FYPD. Of players with a minimum of 100 plate appearances, Dylan, Langford is the only player in the league in the minor leagues with an end zone contact rate above 85%, chase rate below 16%, and a 90th percentile exit velocity over 107 miles per hour. His combination of bat to ball skills, plate approach, and power is sort of unheard of. And I think by the time FYPD season really kicks into full gear, he's probably the number one guy universally. I don't think there's going to be too much debate outside of
him. 100%. I mean, you talk about those big three you look at, and it's like sometimes you see the warts, right? You see like, oh, he's got a huge exit velocity. Oh, but his angles are, you know, like average of 5 degrees or whatever. When he pulls it, it's he averages at a negative, like he pulls it into the ground. But none of that happens. Like, he's got the high exit velocities and his angles are great. And then like with the chase, oh, he's got a really low chase rate. Yeah, but he probably doesn't swing. But no, he actually swings at a reasonable rate. So it's like everything there, like there's no warts almost on all of his data. And you know, the Rangers just promoted him today on Monday to AAA. So, you know, there's talk they may call him up before the season's over. That would be pretty great if they do. I mean, I think you're right. I think he's going to be the number one pick in FYPD, at least like amongst Dylan Cruz and Wyatt Langford. I think Wyatt Langford will be the one that's picked before Cruz in probably 9 out of 10 FYPDs. I can't see it changing from now. I know a lot of people, there's the hype train is going for Langford right now, big time. I still would go Cruz too. I don't think I'd have some of the other guys that maybe we'll talk about next ahead of Cruz, but I think Langford's the clear like 1A over the previous 1A, 1B conversation with Cruz.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. In terms of the prep players in this draft, there is a couple of guys that have really stood out. One of them being Walker Jenkins, who I wrote up. And I got to say, Dylan, I am fairly excited to potentially get some shares of Jenkins or maybe swing some deals this offseason and allow me to get my hands on him. I actually have Jenkins in a couple of open universe leagues, so do actually already have some shares. But you know, we're talking about, you know, contact rate north of 85%, end zone contact rate north of 90%. Guy does not swing and miss. Did not swing and miss at all, even in terms of, you know, his full season debut. Same deal. Chase rate was low. The exit velocity data isn't crazy yet. But when you consider sort of age and level, still pretty good. We know what the power is there. I think if you've seen this guy before, seen the physicality, power projection is obvious. Jenkins is definitely going to be the top prep player from this draft for me. And I don't think I'm going on a limb by saying that. But the numbers back it as well. And then, you know, Bryce Eldridge has been awesome. The power is great. You know, the swing and miss is present, but not like out of control. There's a lot of parallels between him and Spencer Jones, just as athletes and the power and sort of the approach and bat to ball profile and all that sort of stuff. So I'm interested to see what Eldridge turns into. And I know we talked about him a little bit last week, but those two names stick out for me. As well as Matt Shaw, being the other college guy I wanted to mention here. These are all guys that, make this a really interesting FYPD this year. If you're like in a 12-team league and you go a couple of rounds, and you could potentially end up with multiples of this sort of this group right here, if you know this quartet, very interesting. I don't know. Of those sort of four guys, I don't know if you had any thoughts.
I mean, we've talked about all of them. I really like them. The thing that I'm curious about is sort of the Walker Jenkins versus Bryce Eldridge, not Walker Jenkins versus Max Clark, but Walker Jenkins versus Bryce Eldridge. Because if you just look at the Statcast, I actually find Eldridge's Statcast data far more interesting than Jenkins. But if you look at the sort of the surface level stats, Jenkins is far superior to Eldridge, way higher WRC plus, does it hit into the ground, stuff like that. So I'm curious to see how, like, which one kind of reigns supreme over the next couple years. Because I think it's just going to be a fascinating journey watching the two of them on. I mean, Matt Shaw, he's great. Like I said, 2020, I think he would be probably the number one FYPD pick in any other year if it didn't have Langford and Cruz and Skeens and some international guys. Just what he's doing and sort of the pedigree and all that. He's going to be a professional hitter in the big leagues sooner rather than later. So, yeah, I mean, all these guys, you can't go wrong. I traded a couple late round picks. So in a 20 team dynasty, I had like 20th pick and like 21st pick. And I traded the two of them. I might have even traded three. I can't remember, for Brian Wu. And I felt really good about it at the time. And then now I'm kind of definitely regretting it because this draft, this FYPD is going to be so deep. You're going to be able to get really good major leaguers, even in the 20s and 30s. And there's going to be someone, you know, in the 40s and 50s that's just going to blow up as well. And it's just a matter of time to figure out who that is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think the power data with Eldridge is much more interesting. I think just the thing with Jenkins, like I said, is the plate skills and, you know, the potential to add more power, which is, you know, the plate skills are tough. It's not easy to develop those. The combination of bat to ball skills and approach, especially at a young age, against more advanced arms, sometimes against guys, you know, that have quite a bit of college experience to go with all that. You wrote up Samuel Basayo, one of the best hitting minor leaguers in baseball this year. I think if you take a look at the numbers, especially for sort of age and level and all that sort of stuff, you could probably make a case this was as good of a season as anybody. So what are your thoughts on Basayo? Like I said, you wrote him up for the article.
Yeah, RoboScout has him as the number one prospect in low A this year. 352 plate appearances. He had a 149 WRC plus, is an age 18 season, 12 home runs, 7 stolen bases. So using those peak projections, it's like 270 batting average, 340 OBP, 30 home runs, over 600 plate appearances, WRC plus 110. Like, it's just, it's all there. I was thinking back today that early in the season, it was like Samuel Basayo and Creed Willems were sort of Baltimore Oriole catchers in low A, who were like in the top five right after, like, you know, first 3 weeks of the season. And it was like, which catcher is going to emerge as the superior one? And like in hindsight, it just seems like such an obvious answer. Like, Creed Willems doesn't have like sort of the athleticism Basayo has. Basayo has that gun for an arm. And just Basayo has just shown all year. I know I listened to your Hot Sheet podcast with Josh talking about the potential of Basayo being the number one prospect in baseball. Like, how absurd would that be? You know, following the footsteps of Grayson Rodriguez, Ali Rutschman, Jackson Holliday. And, you know, I don't think it's that far-fetched. I have Basayo very high, even though he's a catcher, and I tend to eschew catchers in my fantasy lists and fantasy leagues, but he definitely looks like he's going to be, you know, like a 60 future value.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. Really interesting, regardless of where he ends up defensively, because I think the bat plays even if he's at first base. It's such unusual power. But I think with the arm that he has, that if catching doesn't work out, third base, or even, you know, a corner outfield spot isn't out of the question. Just depends on how he's moving, how he's tracking at that point in time. Speaking of someone who's probably not going to move or track all that well in a corner outfield spot, Moises Ballesteros, another guy who's had a tremendous season. There are some top-notch catching or bat first catching prospects in their minor leagues right now. Ballesteros, another sort of, A-ball darling. You wrote him up too. Talk to me about him.
Yeah, the top four RoboScout guys in low A are Samuel Basayo, catcher, Samuel Zavala, outfielder for the Padres, who just based on the fact, he's so young also has stolen bases in his profile, gets a nice score. Tyron Lorenzo of the Dodgers, another catcher, is number three, and maybe we'll talk about him in a future article. And then Moises Ballesteros is number four, so another catcher, like you say. He was on the scene last year as a RoboScout darling. It's the same thing you're talking about, the contact, the exit velocities, the chase were all solid. The barrel rates were great. Question is whether he could stick at catcher. If you've seen him, it probably looks like the odds are against him that he will, but just the bat's going to play no matter what. He's just done it again for a second year. Like I said, RoboScout has him fourth in low A, ahead of Ethan Salas, ahead of Lazaro Montes, ahead of Gabriel Gonzalez, Jet Williams, some of these like guys who are just been rocketing up the charts. I have, for the same reason I just said, as a catcher, I tend to back off. If he's going to be first base, I kind of back off. I'm not as excited about the profile, but I kind of regret it. I had him actually in a couple leagues and I dropped him because I just, found the next shiny low minor league guy with the speed and the all-star profile that I thought. Who did you say?
No, I said sure.
Yeah. And now, it's just two years in a row, he's just dominated. I think he's going to be a major leaguer. I don't think he's going to be a catcher. And I think he's going to be, slugging profile, kind of like what I just said about Basayo, like 25 to 30 home runs, good OBP, good batting average. WRC plus above average too. So he's a good one for the Cubs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you're not that playing time that defensive value earns you isn't important and valuable in fantasy, I do think at the end of the day, you got to chase after the best bats and these guys will find a way to work themselves into the lineup. Couple of bats that are very similar to each other. It's a profile that I like. Guys meet with some questionable bats of ball skills, but really good approach. High-end power, shows in games, and there's some athleticism here. I'm talking about Emmanuel Rodriguez of the Twins and Owen Casey of the Cubs. Both of these guys have some swing and miss in their game. They both have incredibly passive approach. You could say it's discerning. I think it is a three true outcome profile. They look to walk. They look to, elevate when they do make contact and do damage. Both have big power and big underlying data as far as the power. So you're up both of those guys. I'm a big fan of both of them. I could see a case for either. Who do you prefer and why?
I kind of think I prefer Casey over Rodriguez, and only because of the perceived value. I think he's just criminally underrated. I know a lot of smart guys are on him, and that's good. But like Emmanuel Rodriguez had buzzed through the roof coming into the season, and he's done okay. He's done well. He's kind of done the same thing he did last year. Just incredible exit velocities, extremely passive approach. Contact is average. And he's playing center field still. I thought he'd move to a corner by now, but he hasn't. But Casey, it's almost identical profile. Like you said, like the 90th percentile exit velocity is like over 110. It's like right at Major Caminero. Yeah, it's you don't get that high without being able to, like, if you have average contact and he has basically average, it's slightly below average, that still is going to be a huge bat. Like the exit velocities when you're that elite, like if they're worth like three times more like than contact. And so it's almost unquestionable that he's going to be an impact bat. Whether or not he becomes more than a three true outcomes profile, I don't know. But I like Casey just merely on the fact that he's so underrated. Like he probably should be a top 25 prospect based just on the bat. And I'm hesitant to move him up there just because I'm a bit worried about the swing and miss. But I probably in good conscience should have him in that level.
Pretty good. Yeah, I agree with you. I think I am Team Casey myself, actually. And it's funny, you know, I kind of went through and picked out a bunch of these names. And they're all players that I think sort of fit the profile of fantasy prospects that I'll be targeting or generally target from year to year. And we'll have some more down there as well. I don't want to list all the names. There's 20 names. We went through a handful of them here and sort of talk through those guys for you. Anybody we didn't mention or someone that might be in the next article, Dylan, that that interests you or someone that's kind of become a fascination if you've had time to dig in or think about prospects at all during your main event chase?
One name I actually wrote in about, even though it's going to be in the subsequent article, is that Robert Calaz from Colorado Rockies.
Yeah.
DSL player, age 17 season. The data is great. I really like him, and I think he's criminally underrated. Speaking of criminally underrated, you know, DSL guys, I think he may emerge as one of the top five from this class. I just really impressed with the underlying data, and you can read about it in the next article.
Yeah, exactly. He was one that for sure stuck out to me. We were aggressive in getting him up and onto the Rockies list. He was on the top 30, has been for a while. And part of it was because of the data. One name I'm going to bring up is Jack Brannigan from the Pirates. He's in the next article. His underlying data is incredible. This is a guy who was a two-way talent at Notre Dame, got a big arm, has defensive value. The numbers are really good. Regardless of park and all that sort of stuff, I was surprised how good the numbers were. And then another one I'll throw out there is Hayden McGarry from the Cubs. He shows up on a ton of these queries and searches for approach, averages contact, and huge raw power. I think he might be criminally underrated. Here's a hot take. I think I'd rather have Hayden McGarry than Matt Mervis.
I could see it. I could definitely see it.
Yeah. Is that spicy? It's because I think that his high-end power is better, and I think the plate skills might be a little bit better. It might be a better profile. I really like McGarry. I think he's a guy I'll probably roster quite a few places this offseason as we get into draft season and, you know, acquisition periods in January, December, January, February, etc. So like McGarry quite a bit. Dylan, well, you can wrap this sucker up. I don't know if you have anything else you wanted to add before we say goodbye to the folks.
No, that's good. Short and sweet. And we'll be coming up with the next 20 names in the next couple days or a week.
Yeah, you'll be hearing from us and our lawyers. That was the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Jeff. He's Dylan. Have a great week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.